Our finances express our faith. Our finances reflect our faith. Our finances are an opportunity for our faith. In one way or another, our faith and our finances are connected. Jesus made that clear when he walked this earth. He actually spoke about money more than anything else of all the topics he covered. Maybe it was one of the reasons why he was so criticized and hated, because not many people like to connect their faith and their finance. But as long as we disconnect our faith from our finance, we will be spiritually impoverished. We may be materially richer, but we will be spiritually poorer. The more we can connect our faith and our finances, we may be financially poorer, we may be, but we will be spiritually richer. Therefore, we ask, how can we connect faith and finance in such a way that we are made spiritually richer? How can we make that connection in a way that will produce spiritual riches? I ask that question obviously because of this campaign, this fundraising campaign that lies before us as a congregation. It's a massive target we have to raise. And I'm sure there are many here who, like me, think about how little we can afford. And even the little we can, what a tiny dent it's going to make in this massive target. And we think, you know, for the pain that's involved in that giving, compared to the actual amount, really, is it worth it? You think of maybe what you have to give up. I know budgets are tight. Inflation is high. Wages are not keeping up. Therefore, this is going to involve perhaps giving up. I think of maybe I have to give up a new motor for my boat. I have to give up some fishing trips. I see a vacation evaporating. I see dental treatment being delayed. Is all that pain worth it? For the very little I can give relative to this amount? There's a lot of pain for very little gain. Is it worth it? Obviously, me, like you probably, we need help in connecting our faith with our finances. And that's what David does for us here in 1 Chronicles 29. He helps us to connect our faith and our finances. The background to this is that David wanted to build God a house, a temple. And he made that proposal to God, and God said, David, great plan, great intention, but you're not the man because you've been involved in too many wars. You've shed too much blood. You can collect, you can gather materials, but it's your son Solomon who's going to be the builder. And so David, here in this chapter, he begins that campaign, that fundraising, that gathering of resources, doing what he can so that Solomon and future generations can enjoy a place of worship. And the way that's set out in this chapter, there are three connections between faith and finances, three truths that connect with finances in this chapter. The focus, as Bill said, is very much on the joyful, the free will giving, and we'll come to that. But before that, we want to look at another couple of truths. And the first one is this. Here's the first truth that will help us connect our faith with our finances. It's God's house. It's God's house. David's opening words in this chapter are highly significant. Notice He says at the end of verse 1, the palace will not be for man, but for the Lord God. This is his opening word. This is not for himself. It's not even for Israel, first and foremost. It is for God. And that's actually repeated. We see it in verse 1. We see it in verse 2. And we see it twice in verse 3. Four times, David emphasizes this is not for man or woman, but for God. It's God's house. Now, there will be personal benefit, obviously, for Israel, for us who are alive, God willing, when the new addition is opened. We will. We'll get personal benefit. We trust also there will be benefit to our community and maybe even to the ends of the earth through the ministry that goes on in the new addition. But first and foremost, we want to emphasize, like David did, that it's a place for God. It's a place for his special presence to be made known. A place for God to draw near. A place for God to be lifted up. A place for God to be taught. A place for God to be served and to equip us for serving. A place of a physical witness. And that's what it was going to be here in Israel. They just had this tent, a tabernacle, that was, compared to most houses, pretty poor. But David wanted to have a physical witness to who God is, that God is, that God is important, that God is worth it, that God has value. And so he says, let's do this for God. And it might be that we listen to this and we say, well, you know, we've already got this beautiful sanctuary. We've already got a place where God is made known and God draws near and God is lifted up, a place where God is served. We do. We're so blessed in a way that many churches are not. But it's interesting that the temple didn't just have a central place. It had other parts to it. It had the Holy of Holies, which was just for the high priest once a year. And then it had the holy place, which all priests were allowed into, but no one else. And then it had the inner court, which all Jews were allowed into, but not Gentiles. And then it had an outer court where Gentiles were able to come and begin to get to know the faith of the God of Israel. And so although there was a Holy of Holies, there were other parts to it that served different functions for different reasons and different groups. And that's part of our hope as well, that while we have a sanctuary, we also have an area where we can gather for fellowship, where we can grow in faith and grow the faith of our children, and where we can go from, like a hub that we come into for gathering and growing, but then going out with all that we have gotten in fellowship and in faith to make known the God of Israel. We want to connect our faith and our finance in this way. And it's especially because we're living in a day when many churches are shrinking, many churches are closing down, church buildings are being changed into other functions. And all of that is a witness. It's saying God isn't. God doesn't exist. God's not important. God's fading. And every church building is an opportunity, therefore, to say God is. God lives. And God is worth it. God is important. It's God's house. Our house, the house we live in, our house makes a statement about us, doesn't it? God's house makes a statement about God. And so we want to connect our faith and our finances in this way by remembering it's God's house. But is there any other truth here we can use to connect our faith and our finance? It is. It's this. It's God's house, but it's also God's money. It's God's money. Nine times in this chapter, in these verses we read, David emphasizes everything we have is from God. Here's some sample verses. All that is in the heavens and the earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom. Both riches and honor come from you. You rule over all. In your hand are power and might, and in your hand it is to make great and give strength to all. All things come from you, and of your own have we given you. At the end here, he talks about the funds have all come from your hand. Nine times David is saying, it's God's money. It's God's money. So when it comes to money, property, resources, assets, we are not the owners of it. We're not even co-owners. We're not even minority owners. We're not even 1% owners of what we have. God is 100% owner. And we, the Bible presents us as simply stewards, managers, people who have been entrusted for a time with some money, with some resources, with some assets to manage and steward and organize and administer and use in such a way that we can give an account one day to the owner for how we have used his money, his assets, his resources. And this is one of those truths that is incredibly difficult to actually believe and put into practice in our life. Because there's probably nothing more innate to us than saying, mine. You hear it, don't you, from children from the youngest age. That's mine. That's my toy. These are my clothes. This is my money. And therefore, to actually release that sense of ownership, it is extremely hard. Our fingers are just stuck in place, aren't they? Mine, mine, mine. And so David says nine times, yours, 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 yours. We need to hear this so many times to just begin to loosen our fingers from what is God's. And David here is recognizing that the people of Israel couldn't give anything unless God had first given to them. And they wouldn't give anything unless they recognized that it was God who had temporarily gifted to them. So this is a truth that we want to teach to our children and use this as an opportunity to do so. Because it might involve saying to our children, look, kids, you know, we were planning to do this year, but God has laid it on our hearts to do this and to support this project. And we do this because this money is actually not ours. It's not our family's. And I know that statements come into this house and it says our IRA, our 401k, our investment, our bank account, and our names are on it, but actually, That's not accurate. It's not ours. We should really rub that out and simply write G-O-D on every statement that comes in. And therefore, we're not actually giving our money to God. It's God's money that He's given to us, and we have an opportunity to give it to Him and His service. So this is a hard truth, I think, especially when we're young, because we tend to think, you know, I've got to reach a certain level of income before this truth becomes true. You know, I've got to start earning a certain amount every day or every week or every couple of weeks, every month, every year, and then I can begin to believe and act upon this truth. But This is true whether our income is a dollar a day or $1 million a day. It doesn't start being true somewhere along the scale. And it doesn't stop being true when we start earning over a certain amount, and we can think, well, I mean, I'm giving a lot to God, so I mean, above this amount, that's, I mean, it's more than anyone else gives. So, no, it doesn't start being true. It doesn't stop being true. It's true. It's God's money. So instead of looking at our toys and our stuff and saying, look at all I've got, it's no, look at what God has given me. How can I use this for Him? It might be we have limited finances. And we say, well, look, at this is what God has given me, and it's not very much. Therefore, I'll try a little bit. It's hardly worth it. But you know, it might be that all you can contribute to this project is a brick, a single brick, the money to buy a brick or a box of nails. That might be true. That's very possibly true for some of us here. And you might look at that brick and say, well, one brick, what's that going to do? But it's not so much, God's not looking so much at what that brick can do, what it can add to the physical building. He's looking more at what the giving of that brick can do in our hearts. It might not build much physically, but it can build a lot spiritually. In fact, for some people, giving one brick will cause so much sacrifice and pain that they will actually grow more spiritually within than those who might give many thousands. God's not looking at the amount that is given, but at the heart it's given from, that is recognizing more and more each day it's God's money. We're just stewards. Some are savers, some are spenders. All are stewards, from the youngest here to the oldest. It's God's money. One last truth here, it's God's salvation. It's God's salvation. We see that at the end of this. It's God's salvation in verses 20 to 22. Bill mentioned how many times it is said that the people gave freely, willingly, cheerfully. There wasn't reluctance, there wasn't resentment. In fact, again, let's just look at some of the verses here. You can go through the chapter and pick them out yourself. Willingly, free will offerings, willingly, a whole heart, offered freely, offered willingly, with the uprightness of my heart, sincerity. It wasn't just an outward thing, it was an inward thing. Freely offered. How is this possible? How was there so much joy, so much freedom, so much pleasure in this giving? I think it's all explained by the end of this chapter. Verse 20 to 22. They focused upon salvation. This is where this whole day climaxed. They blessed the Lord. They worshiped the Lord. They offered sacrifices to the Lord. 1,000 bulls, 1,000 rams, 1,000 lambs, multiple drink offerings, sacrifices in abundance for all Israel. Why did God give Israel the sacrificial system? It was to teach them that He saves by the sacrifice of another. And those with faith who offered the sacrifices with that knowledge knew that these sacrifices didn't save, but there were pictures of the one who did and who would. It was pointing them forwards to the great salvation where God would dispense with all these animals and all these birds and all these drink offerings, and He would give us His Son as the sacrifice, the offering, once and for all, that would end every other sacrifice. This would be God's most abundant provision, the fulfillment of verses 20 to 22. A sacrifice, the sacrifice of another. And what does it result in? Look at verse 22. They ate and drank before the Lord on that day with great gladness. These were people with faith. They were looking forward to Jesus coming, that these sacrifices we were pointing to and that would one day be done away with because of his superior sacrifice. And it brought them into eating and drinking fellowship with God. And remember, Israel just had shadow truth. It was like God was putting on a show in these sacrifices, but it was in a theater that was dark and that had no microphones. And Israel are in the audience, and they're seeing through a glass darkly, they're seeing dimly, they're seeing shadow truths, they aren't seeing everything, as if they're sitting in this dark theater, hearing distant voices, seeing shadowy displays. But when the New Testament comes and the light of the world is turned on, it's like the theater spotlights are turned on and microphones are given to God's Son. And there's a PA system, and the message goes out with far greater clarity, far greater beauty, far greater impact and volume. And therefore, we eat and drink cheerfully in God's presence, as we did last night with the Lord's Supper, as we'll do in a couple of weeks. So that if Israel got salvation in shadow form and gave so freely, willingly, cheerfully, happily, how much more should those of us who are now in the light, as we look back and see that ultimate sacrifice? God freely gave his Son. His Son freely gave himself. And the response is that we freely give to God. God's free will giving makes us free will givers. It's God's salvation. So, how can we connect faith and finance to make us spiritually richer? And that's the ultimate aim of anything this church does. We're not trying to build a cathedral. We're not ultimately looking at bricks and mortar. But this is an opportunity to grow. This is an opportunity to get spiritually richer. And therefore we connect truth with finance. It's God's house, it's God's money, and it's God's salvation. As we grasp and keep these three truths before us, we will connect truth with finances to increase our spiritual riches. And therefore, every giving opportunity is an opportunity to grow spiritually. I hope we'll develop in our deeper understanding of these truths. There's no one here, I'm sure, that denies it's God's house, it's God's money, and it's God's salvation, right? But these truths can grow deeper. These truths can spread their roots and their fruits in our lives more. And that's what we have the opportunity to experience. And even more than that, the spiritual riches that can be developed as we enter into God's heart, when we think of his cheerful giving of himself in his Son, his cheerful giving of salvation to his people. He does that with great pleasure, great joy, great willingness. There's no reluctance, there's no resentment, there's no coercion. He is the most willing giver of every good, especially the supreme gift of Christ. And he's here to do that again this morning. And as we experience that generosity, it surely changes our hearts so that we become these cheerful givers and therefore experience what it's like to be God, in a sense. To know the cheerfulness and the joyfulness of God in giving us his Son as we give to him. We have the opportunity to grow in spiritual riches in our giving, but we also have the opportunity to help others grow in spiritual riches. We want to bless our children, don't we? And our children's children with a facility that will bring many spiritual riches into their lives. We want to enrich our community. We want to provide a place that people can come in. And maybe they're the outer courts, as it were, a place for inquirers, for seekers, a stepping stone, a place that's maybe not as intimidating and threatening, scary to people as, say, a sanctuary like this and a great number like this. And we want to provide a place for training and education so that we are equipped and we equip others, and that people, young and old and all ages in between, will get inspired and motivated to go out into this state, this nation, and the other nations of the world with the gospel. It will be a hub to gather, to grow, and to go. Let's pray. Rich and enriching God, enrich our faith by helping us to give for the right reasons, for the truth, and in the right way, with joy. Amen.